This is BTV, Business Television. Discover companies to invest in.
Coming up this week, three next-generation tech companies, from hardware to social media to pharmaceuticals. Plus an update on a special copper mining company.
Hello, I'm Taylor Tone.
And I'm Jessica Katrachak. Welcome to BTV Business Television.
The tech sector is like one of those restaurants that seems to have everything on the menu.
There are opportunities for investment to suit just about every taste.
And tolerance for risk. That's why it's so hard to know what to choose.
Hopefully, the three very different tech companies in this episode will whet your appetite.
But first, here's what one analyst has to say about investing in new technology.
Investors should understand that with every new technology, there's often a hype cycle. In the early days, we can understand that the value potential is there, but we tend to overestimate the potential for value in the near term. And we often underestimate it over the long term. And what this creates is a period of hype in the near term and excitement, followed by a correction period and a rationalization. And so investors should be wary of these risks when investing in this sector.
As the revolution in wireless telecommunications continues to advance, it takes a lot of research, development, and manufacturing to keep up. Baylin Technologies has long played an important role in the transmission of this revolution. Literally, because Baylin is in the antenna business.
We do antenna development for smartphone platforms. We did the brick phone back in the 80s, and last month we did 16 million antennas for cell phones. That's our first division. The second one is the embedded devices group, which is the antenna technology that would relate to embedded systems such as an Internet of Things, an IoT device, a set-top box, or a small cell. We also do SATCOM, so we have a lot of power amplifiers that are used on Earth stations as well to be able to move RF frequencies up to satellites and back down to Earth. And lastly, we do infrastructure antennas for small cell applications related to the upcoming 5G network.
5G technology will increase data rates and system capacity while reducing latency and saving energy. It's where companies like Baylin need to be.
5G is an enormous network that needs to be built. First of all, it's 10 times more powerful than the best of LTE. So we're working very hard with a number of carriers to come up with the latest technology that's required to be able to help with the latency and the bandwidth requirements for 5G.
Daniel Kim, Baylin's Executive VP of Corporate Development and formerly an analyst following the company, explains why he believes Baylin is so 5G compatible.
We'll see new form factors and new features we have never seen on antennas before. Baylin, as a result, is extremely well positioned to address that market need as it provides custom designs and rapid prototyping, two critical factors that are required to drive 5G development.
As development of 5G ramps up, Baylin's strategic decision to move its operations from abroad to North America has brought it closer to the action.
Probably with 65% of the worldwide spending will happen in North America alone. So in order for the company to be well positioned, we need to shift operations and R&D to North America, which we've accomplished. We are at the table with engineering firms within the carriers. We are part of the conversation. We're part of the development at the earliest of stages.
Besides relocating, Baylin has transformed in other ways since going public in 2013. The company wanted to perform as well financially as they have technologically.
In the last 5 years, we've been growing at 23% compounded annually. As well, we've addressed a number of the issues financially to be able to cost cut and work our way through to a much better platform, which you can see in our margin performance, which has doubled over the last 5 years. One of the things that we've been doing is diversifying and outsourcing areas that are not critical to the core deliverables by Baylin. At the same point in time, growing the base of the company in the area of engineering and technology and being able to keep ourselves laser focused on the needs and the opportunities that are in front of us.
One of the newest opportunities is the base station antenna market.
In North America, there are 400,000 base stations. This market segment alone represents $40 billion. This has been the growth engine for the company, growing at 164% in Q2 alone, and we would expect this growth will accelerate going forward and will be the biggest growth driver for the company.
But it's not the technology itself that sustains a company's success.
There's an underlying resilience to our company. To be able to survive as a technology company for 40 years is an enormous milestone. We have 150 engineers, 15 PhDs that are working feverishly on the next generation of products. And as the world continues to change and all the connectivity points that are required for us to build artificial intelligence, autonomous cars, smart cities, banking changes with cryptocurrency, there's no end of demands for connectivity across the world. I think it'll pale in comparison to what's happened in the last 40 years compared to what's going to happen in the next 40 years. And I'm excited to be a part of that.
There's little doubt Baylin will continue to be a player in the development of wireless telecommunications. And if you use your phone to track their performance in the market, there's a good chance a Baylin antenna will help keep you posted.
Coming up next, cash for content. Does a new social network really have what it takes?
Most other social networks are a pastime. Peaks allows you to run an actual business.
We'll be right back. You're watching BTV.
Welcome back to BTV. What happens when you combine e-commerce, social media, and live streaming video? The answer is Peak Social. Company chairman and CEO Mark Atwaru brings us up to date on the progress of the company and gives us a preview of where it's headed next.
Peak Social is the world's only e-commerce enabled live streaming social network that allows you to transact and interact with the global audience to build your brand, build your business, and build awareness of you. The main differentiating factor between Peak Social and all other social networks is that, particularly in the live streaming category, is that you can actually make a living off of it. Our top five money makers on Peaks all make well over $200,000 a year. And then for other people, there's thousands of people that use Peaks to supplement their income. So whereas most other social networks are a pastime, Peaks allows you to run an actual business.
Peak Social generates revenue for both the company and the content creators. And there's more than one way to make money on Peaks. Viewers can pay, they can tip, and there's money to be made the old-fashioned way, advertising.
Say, for example, I wanted to go on Peaks and give Spanish courses. I'd broadcast live for, you know, half an hour for free, gather an audience. Whatever point in the broadcast that I'd like to go into paid mode, I'd hit the button, it's now paid. If you like the first hour and you want to pay for the next hour, a paywall drops down and then you'd have to pay me. On the tipping side, it's kind of buskering. People perform, they do whatever it is that they do, and if their fans like them, they tip them. Third way for people to make money, say for example, you just have interesting content and you're not really interested in charging anybody. What you do when you start your broadcast is you type in a title, the artificial intelligence in our platform selects advertisers that match your genre, presents them to you, and you select the advertisers that you'd like to advertise in your live stream, and we share the ad revenue with you.
Peak Social began as an app, one that generated revenue from day one. But the launch of the company's website earlier this year has proven to be a game changer.
And now it's just one button, one click, and simple, right?
Yes, it is.
Prior to the launch of the website, all of our users were in one of the two apps, and in order to spend money, they would have to make purchases out of the app stores. There was a cost to that for us. The cost is 30% of the gross. By launching the website, we were able to double the user base, and offer payment services on the web, which reduced that 30% cost to a 2.5% cost.
With the Peak Social website up and running, the company is moving ahead with another social media endeavor based on an acquisition they made earlier this year.
We are launching a new social network called Personas, which is a more Instagram or Facebook-like, where you have followers, you post videos, pictures, you're able to do everything that you do in social media. But there's a few unique features that we found are in high demand, and that's privacy. So we added the feature that allows you to segment your posts between family, friends, business, and otherwise, so that not everybody sees everything that you're posting and you have a degree of privacy. We found that people like that a lot.
Personas will also leverage the live streaming and payment processing expertise Peak Social has developed. Atwaru sees it as a next-generation social media platform, one that offers the features he's convinced users are eagerly awaiting.
What excites me most about the future of the company is just the tangent on live streaming as an industry and the degree to which it's projected to absorb a lot of the traditional television market and become a mainstay of media consumption globally. There's a lot of players in the space doing a wide variety of different things. We feel like our offering is unique in the market and that we have an ingrained place in the market that as the market grows, we'll grow with the market. So it's an exciting place to be.
The Peak social platform generated gross revenues of $2.1 million during its first quarter this year, almost double from last year. That might explain why this CEO is so optimistic about the company.
Lance Technologies is powering merchants and users with an award-winning mobile payment and reward platform.
Prior to Glance, I was co-founder and CEO of a company called PayByPhone, which brought mobile parking to over 100 cities around the world. Glance changes the way businesses and consumers interact around payments and reward systems using mobile devices. If you look at what's happened in China recently, the mobile payments have gone from a small part of the payment infrastructure to now by far the predominant form of payment. Wall Street Journal quoted that last year $9 trillion were transacted by mobile devices in China. We see similar opportunities in North America. One of our main implementations is in the restaurant space right now, and that lets you pay for your bill from your table without having to wait around for the waitress or a chip and pin machine and lets you get out of there 10% faster in terms of the whole time you're sitting in a restaurant. We recently announced our beta of our PayMe app, which is designed to allow anyone to download an app and receive full merchant capabilities using their own mobile device. Since we've had such success with our anti-fraud technology, which uses a lot of the components in your smartphone to help prevent fraud, we've really freed merchants from the requirement to have chip and PIN machines and opens up a lot of possibilities on the mobile front. So our objective is to let anyone be a merchant in minutes. We've announced that we're working on a blockchain-based rewards platform, which will feed into our current highly flexible rewards platform. Consumers have the freedom to choose when and where to redeem those rewards.
Coming up next, a mining analyst checks out a recent acquisition and does the math.
In effect, it's sort of a 1+1=3 type of scenario.
And later, how do you turn trace amounts of cannabinoids into amazing new medical treatments? You need the right technology.
They're working on a biosynthesis process for cannabinoids, which can really revolutionize the way that we manufacture cannabinoids.
We'll be right back. You're watching BTV.
Welcome back to BTV. Demand for copper continues to grow on an annual basis, especially for batteries and electric vehicle industries. The current political climate regarding tariffs in the U.S. and declining mine output has put mining analyst Stefan Juano giving his thoughts on the Copper Mountain Mining Corporation.
The Copper Mountain story is centered on the Copper Mountain Mine, which is located in British Columbia. It's been in production since about 2011. It's a large open pit operation, actually operating north of 40,000 tons a day right now. Just recently, the company spent a lot of time focused on a satellite deposit called New Ingerbelle, located a couple kilometers away. Drilling there has now defined 175 million ton resource, which in combination with Copper Mountain really stands to extend the overall project's mine life significantly and or garner a throughput expansion in time.
Earlier this year, Copper Mountain acquired Altona Mining, a highly prospective large land package that includes the Eva Copper Project. This permanent development is designed as an open pit copper gold operation with a 14-year mine life.
A second chapter to the Copper Mountain story is the Copper Project in Australia, which was acquired last year. It's underpinned by a recent feasibility study that outlines a 90 million pound a year production profile. So in essence, it's very complementary to the Copper Mountain story as we know it today. In effect, it's sort of a 1+1=3 type of scenario.
With near-term sentiments on the base metals market seeing many ups and downs, Stefan Juano has some thoughts on the long-term outlook for copper.
A key consideration when investing is asset location. Political jurisdiction, political risk, and your ability to tolerate it are key things an investor needs to ask themselves. complexion of an asset can change drastically overnight due to political reasons, and investor value can be wiped off the table extremely quickly. I would say it's the smart investors, though, that are looking beyond that and recognize that in the next 12 to 18 to 24 months, there's a pretty compelling argument that supply issues are real, and they're not going away. And that does paint a strong picture for the base metals looking forward.
Copper Mountain has assets in two of the friendliest mining jurisdictions in the world. When all is said and done, Stefan Ioanou believes there is a very strong case for the stronger for longer base metal pricing in the near future. Canvas MedTech has Canvas.me, a free, unbiased, and physician-backed educational platform aiming to become the Google of cannabis data.
Canvas MedTech is one of the few data analytics companies within the cannabis space. We lead and win with education and provide meaningful insights to the rest of the industry. We're building patient-centric solutions for the different industry gaps that we're seeing, the first one being in the education realm and the second one with data analytics. There really isn't anybody pushing education first, and there really isn't anybody looking at data analytics to serve that back to the end user, to inform the industry on why it is important to learn about the different uses of cannabis and what are people actually telling you in the data. What we wanted to do is not curate any content where people are either enticed or pushed in any direction to get on script. We wanted them to learn, and that's how we win. We win on the analytics and understanding why people are learning about cannabis, what they're treating for, a little bit about why they're doing it, what ailment, and then not having that push at the end to go on script allows us to play that fine line of being agnostic and non-biased. We've grown to 12 full-time with 7 contractors, so the office is pretty busy, almost at 20 people within 1 year, and the growth trajectory is just phenomenal, and it really is exciting for us.
When we come back, this pharmaceutical company's CEO makes one thing perfectly clear.
Our company, we don't use any THC. We don't think there's a need to do that.
We'll be right back. You're watching BTV.
Welcome back to BTV. You probably heard that a number of companies are moving forward with developing pharmaceutical products derived from cannabis. Maxim Jacobs comments on the shift in the public policy and attitudes that's making this possible and potentially profitable.
In other areas, the regulators are getting friendlier to anything associated with the drug culture. For example, psilocybin, which is the active ingredient in magic mushrooms, the FDA approved a phase 2B trial for the treatment of depression. So, things are changing. It's all very interesting.
InMed is a biopharmaceutical company with a bit of a twist.
Biosynthesis has been used for several decades in the pharmaceutical industry to manufacture a number of different types of compounds. The most common one that most people know about is insulin. All of the insulin in the world today is biosynthesized.
Edison Director of Healthcare Research for North America, Maxim Jacobs, has looked very closely at this convergence of biosynthesis and cannabis.
InMed has a lot of potential. They're working on a biosynthesis process for cannabinoids, which can really revolutionize the way that we manufacture cannabinoids. It's much more efficient potentially than the old-fashioned way, which is growing the plant itself. That takes a lot of time. There could be a lot of impurities. You don't really know what you're going to get. With a biosynthesis process, you could have a product that's inexpensive to make and of high quality. The market that they're addressing is growing quite strongly.
Of all of the pharmaceutical products derived from ingredients originally found in a variety of plants, only one of those plants has ever raised any eyebrows. InMed is convinced those days are over for cannabis.
When you hear the term cannabis, that's making reference to the plant. So if you hear of someone being a cannabis company, that means that they are growing and operating and cultivating and selling the plant itself. We don't do that. We focus on the individual drugs that can be identified or isolated from the plant, but we take those and we turn those into prescription-based pharmaceutical products.
A lot of the stigma of cannabinoids is gone. We saw GW Pharmaceuticals get approval for Epidiolex, which is based on CBD. They were able to get it rescheduled by the DEA from Schedule 1, which basically says you're not allowed to have it, to Schedule 5, which has very few restrictions.
InMed is exploring the therapeutic potential of many different cannabinoids, except one.
Our company, we don't use any THC. We don't think there's a need to do that. Wherever THC is active in the human body, we have found other cannabinoids that are equally as active but don't have any psychoactive properties. So we intend to use those rather than using THC.
It's the company's two enabling technologies that will ultimately unlock the ability of cannabis to provide a multitude of new treatments. The biosynthesis platform is the enabling technology that will manufacture the products. But that's only one piece of the puzzle.
The second enabling technology is called bioinformatics. And what we do is we use in silico or computer algorithms combined with our own know-how to try to identify and predict which cannabinoids are going to have what kind of effects in the human body. And that leads us to very quickly identify the lead candidates for further development in our pipeline.
InMed has three drug candidates in the pipeline: an eye drop for glaucoma, a topical cream for oral facial pain, and their lead development program, INM750.
INM750 is a two cannabinoid product, which is a topical cream for the treatment of a very bad genetic skin disorder called epidermolysis bullosa. We are currently in the later stages of the toxicology studies that need to be conducted prior to entering human clinical trials. Our game plan right now is to seek permission to enter human clinical trials early in the second half of 2019 and to conduct our first phase one human clinical trials before the end of 2019. It's going to move us from being a preclinical stage biotech company into being a clinical stage, and that's a very significant milestone in our industry.
Drug development takes time, and Eric Adams is well aware that time isn't free.
The company has been very successful in fundraising over the last couple of years. Currently, we have about $26 million Canadian in the bank. That gives us a runway of over 2 years to develop our programs and move those forward. What really attracted me to the opportunity here at InMed was first and foremost the technology. It's rare to find a company that is at this early stage that has such a broad reach of technology, enabling technology, that's going to make a real difference in the pharmaceutical world.
As InMed Pharmaceuticals brings new cannabinoid-based medicines to the marketplace, it appears that even a plant can experience a paradigm shift.
You know what I really like about tech sector companies is that wow factor you often get from looking at what they've come up with.
True, and that you might be looking at investing in the next big one.
Even better. Thanks for joining us today. For BTV, I'm Jessica Katrachak.
And I'm Taylor Tone. Until next time, may your portfolio prosper.
This is BTV, Business Television. Discover companies to invest in.
This week, from tomatoes to cannabis, gold production in Colombia, novel technology for lithium, bringing silver production to the Yukon, and finding energy from wastewater. Hello, I'm Taylor Tone.
And I'm Jessica Katrachak. Welcome to BTV Business Television.
On this episode, we take a look at a wide variety of investment opportunities, including mining, tech, and farming.
Like Village Farms International, a very successful large-scale greenhouse grower. It performed so well last year that it's been recognized as a 2018 OTCQX Best 50 company.
In fact, it ranked number 4 on this prestigious list. Jason Palterwich from the OTC Markets Group explains how companies qualify.
The OTCQX Best 50 has a number of criteria that we use in our selection. First and foremost, we use total return and average dollar volume growth as the basis. They cannot be penny stocks. Their closing price as of December 31st, 2017 has to have been above 25 cents, and they have to have traded at least $500,000 in total dollar volume for the year.
And here's how companies benefit from being listed on the OTC.
Access to a broader investor base. So you're gaining access to U.S. investors south of the border that for whatever reason don't want to trade north of the border or can't, so they can trade in their U.S. accounts in U.S. dollars. The other advantage would be an actual increase in their global liquidity.
Village Farms International is one of the largest and longest operating growers of greenhouse produce in North America and the only publicly traded greenhouse produce company in Canada. But the big story is that it's adding a new cash crop to its existing product line of fruits and vegetables, cannabis. We caught up with Village Farms president and CEO in one of his greenhouses in Delta, BC, to talk about his company's move into cannabis.
About 3 decades ago, we saw a clear opportunity using very high-end agricultural technology for high-value crops that can be grown or need to be grown to meet a market demand on a year-round basis. And over those 30 years, we've become one of the largest producers of produce, specifically tomatoes, peppers, cukes, in North America. We have almost 6 million square feet of high-tech production in Texas, here 4 million square feet, Ontario another 3 million, so on and so forth. When the Canadian government decided to legalize medicinal marijuana, that's when we really started doing our homework and eventually made a decision to move into the space.
This bold move by Village Farms was made possible through a recent joint venture with Emerald Health Therapeutics, a licensed medical cannabis producer also based in BC. Together, they each own 50% of Pure Sun Farms Corporation, a vertically integrated company that aims to be one of the most reliable growers and suppliers of quality cannabis products across Canada and internationally. With their combined infrastructure and expertise, it's a company well positioned to enter the much anticipated recreational marijuana market.
Currently, we're converting 10% of the assets that Village Farms International owns. That 1.1 million square feet conversion of a standalone greenhouse here adjacent to this property represents 10% of the assets we own in Texas and here in British Columbia. And that conversion, once it's fully operational, will generate close to $100 million more than all of Village Farm generates after 29 years in business. You know, I look at our business as we are greenhouse growers in controlled environments, regardless of if it's peppers, tomatoes, or cannabis. And our underlying business of doing that is the same. We're just changing a certain crop, and we've done that many times. In the 9 months since we launched this joint venture, we're on a verge within a year of possibly being the largest cannabis producer in Canada, if not the world. Time will tell, but I think that Pure Sun Farms will certainly be in the top 5 in terms of capacity, in terms of what's produced in the next 2 years.
And as Michael DiGilio explains, that confidence comes from experience in the science and business of agriculture.
You know, this is a fixed cost business. You don't give a plant more fertilizer and have more yield. But if you use technology, making a better environment, more output of the yields you grow, that all helps to lower your cost, and we do that every day.
Ultimately, the fact that Pure Sun Farms is able to operate as a low-cost producer bodes well for them in a market that is yet to be tested.
With revenues of $200 million as the underlying business, you know, we feel we're in a very de-risked situation compared to our competitors. So I think, you know, we're prepared to be a strong competitor to those other companies going forward. I think our timing's perfect as we're starting to plant out crops over the next few months. This is farming, and you know, we're farmers, and it's been a long battle in 30 years to get it right.
Village Farms recently closed a $10 million financing to be used mainly to bring their cannabis division into full-scale commercial production. You can find Village Farms listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange. The symbol there is VFF. And in the U.S., their symbol is VFFIF.
Coming up next, a company that believes it's going to more than triple its annual gold production of 60,000 ounces.
We probably will achieve somewhere in the 200,000 ounces this year.
And later, we turn our attention to silver and a mine revival in the Yukon.
It is, without doubt, one of the highest grade silver districts in the world.
We'll be right back. You're watching BTV.
Welcome back to BTV. To set the scene for our next feature, we spoke with Frank Holmes, CEO of U.S. Global Investors. Here's his big picture view on investing in gold.
We do believe that the supply from mines is shrinking, and you have to look for those gold stocks which are stable and have the potential to grow. But really important for all these investors is there's no silly things done by management that destroys the value metrics per share.
Gran Colombia is the largest underground producer of silver and gold in Colombia. It has several mines in production, and ongoing exploration gives blue sky potential to its Segovia operations. Segovia has been expanding and modernizing over the last 5 years. But since we last featured the company on BTV, significant debt restructuring has reawakened investor interest in Gran Colombia. Here's what the executive chairman has to say.
We believe that the market has reacted very positive to the three things that we've done. Number one, the reduction of the debt. Number two, the stabilizing of the cost and the improving of the ounces. And number three, the restructuring of the debt. Not only the investors that have been loyal to us, but now institutional investors are starting to pay attention to this company.
All of this has generated more cash to invest in its main focus, Segovia, which is the most prolific of Gran Colombia's properties. Out of 23 different known vein systems, only three are being mined, which alone accounts for 80% of their current gold production. At present, three veins are in production, with the potential for more in the future.
We believe it's got one of the richest vein systems in Colombia, if not in Latin America. We are mining some incredible widths, some incredible grades. So our next effort is to start stepping out into exploration in areas that haven't been developed in the past.
Also important to note is the work that has been done to upgrade and modernize the Segovia mine over the last 5 years, which has included significant health and safety improvements. The efforts are paying off in more ways than one.
The last time had renovations was about 80 years ago. The first effort that we did was to change the culture of the workers. It's been a complete success, which has stabilized our community relations in the country. The next step that we took started modernizing the plant. Now you have an absolute modern, state-of-the-art, environmentally stable and friendly environment that helps also with the workers. We have developed a much more stable underground exploration and exploitation area by having better tunnels, better ventilation, the first access to a safety area that we developed for our miners in case of accidents, the only one existing in Colombia right now.
A second important achievement has been the increase in production in Segovia over the past 2 years, which has turned into a successful, low-cost, and profitable operation.
We've had two successful quarters of 50,000 ounces per quarter production. We probably will achieve somewhere in the 200,000 ounces this year.
And a third important bit of news is the recent restructuring of Gran Colombia's debt position, which provides investors with a clearer picture of the company's balance sheet. Financier Frank Holmes also agrees that Gran Colombia is one to watch.
This is a company that's now gone from negative cash to a surplus of almost $20 million on the balance sheet. They are increasing their production dramatically, resolved any working issues they've had with people. They've put more money into safety. Their board of directors have very competent people, well-known in Toronto from the mining sector. So I think that the Grand Columbia is in a great position for growth in Colombia.
When it comes to how he wants his company perceived, this CEO doesn't hesitate to offer his take on things.
We have now excess cash that we're going to be dedicating into exploration. We can put our efforts to open up new areas and new fronts. So this company has a growth profile like no other company has right now.
Investors seem to be catching on to this company's story. Long considered by management to be undervalued relative to its peers, the share price recently hit a new 52-week high. You can check out all the details at their website. They're at GrandColumbiaGold.com.
Next up, Entertopia, with a new technology you need to know about.
The key focus commodity-wise is lithium. Last year was the first year that we surpassed 1 million electric vehicles in the world, and it's anticipated by 2040 there'll be 50 million electric vehicles being built every year. Our key project is in Clayton Valley, Nevada, and we're using at-surface rock, and we're turning that into a synthetic brine by adding water and adding different chemicals to change the pH. So it reduces impurities and it creates a very pure lithium brine. And from what we've seen, the purest lithium brine in the industry today. The remainder of the year is our ongoing bench testing with our technology partner, Genesis Water Technologies, to come up with battery grade lithium. Ultimately, we're working on perfecting the technology, upgrading the property in Clayton Valley so we could produce from Clayton Valley, and then licensing the technology to other brine producers in the world as we have the licensing rights for Argentina, Bolivia, Chile, and the United States. The EV industry is one of the fastest growing sectors in our world today. Just China alone will put a factor of 10 to 20 times the amount of lithium that's being consumed today within the next 12 years.
After the break, find out which copper producer this analyst has taken a shine to.
For anyone that's bullish on the outlook for copper, we tend to steer them towards leveraged plays.
Coming up later, putting silver in the Yukon back on the map.
We've put close to 80, 90 million ounces of silver on the books, indicated and inferred.
We'll be right back. You're watching BTV.
Welcome back to BTV. Copper Mountain Mining has recently completed the acquisition of the Altona Mining Company in Australia, an important milestone in the evolution of the company. With operations now on two continents, we asked Cormark Securities base metals analyst Stefan Ioano about the significance of this deal.
Copper Mountain is obviously one of the first established producers to make a very significant growth step since copper price has turned. I think, you know, people are anticipating M&A activity in the space in general, and you could argue Copper Mountain's been a first mover with respect to that.
Copper Mountain Mining's flagship mine in British Columbia is about a three-hour drive from the port of Vancouver. They produce about 80 million pounds of copper per year.
We are attracted to the project in that it's a relatively low-grade operation, big open pit, and because of that low grade, it translates into a very leveraged profile in terms of production and cash flow. So what that means is, you know, small changes in the copper price on a percentage basis translate into meaningful changes with regards to cash flow per share, which is a key metric a lot of investors and analysts look to when valuing companies like Copper Mountain.
Analysts now looking at Copper Mountain have to add the company's Australian acquisition into the equation. For about 70 million Australian dollars, Copper Mountain now owns 100% of the Eva Copper project in Queensland.
They're getting a project that on paper has a NAV of about $460 million Australian. So quite lucrative. The thing to me that's very interesting, aside from location globally, It's very, very complementary to the existing Copper Mountain mine. Again, an open pit producing about 80 to 85 million pounds of copper a year at a similar cash cost profile, call it somewhere between $1.65 and $1.85 per pound. For anyone that's bullish on the outlook for copper, we tend to steer them towards leveraged plays, and Copper Mountain is one of the most leveraged plays out there.
The target is for the Eva Copper project to begin production by about 2020. And moving the company forward will be its new president and CEO, Gil Clausen. Everybody loves a comeback story. This one is set in the mining-friendly jurisdiction of Canada's Yukon, where Alexco Resources is moving the Keno Hill Silver District back toward production. The company acquired the 233 square kilometer area from the Canadian government in 2006. This CEO is confident it's time to put Yukon Silver back on the map.
Keno Hill was the second largest silver producer in Canada. Between 1913 and 1988, it produced a little more than 200 million ounces of silver, but an average grade of, in today's parlance, of about 1,200 to 1,400 grams per ton silver. So it is, without doubt, one of the highest grade silver districts in the world.
The rebirth of silver mining at Keno Hill began in 2011. But even when operations of the Bella Keno mine were suspended in 2013, Scarsdale Equities mining analyst Mike Niehauser, who has been following the company since 2008, knew it was just a matter of time until the curtain was bound to rise on Alexco's next act.
I think Alexco has one of the best management teams in the industry. They're very well-rounded, and it starts with Clint Nauman, who earlier in his career came in to solve some environmentals at Greens Creek in Alaska, and in so doing he found a way to work with regulators and found a way to solve complex environmental problems, build a business around that, Alexco Environmental Services, and that led to him winning a bid, I think among 16 different companies, for the Keno Hill Silver District, which I think was acquired for less than $1 million.
We're in the environmental business because we see it as part and parcel of the mining business. I know it's difficult for some people to get their head around the fact that we're miners on one hand, and on the other hand, we are cleaning up or remediating brownfield sites. We see the two as complementary businesses, actually, and certainly we see the environmental business strategically as leading us to opportunities like Keno Hill.
That opportunity, according to Clint Newman, is contained in about 1 million tons of material from 3 or 4 different deposits in the district, just waiting to be mined.
We've done a significant amount of exploration. We've put close to 80, 90 million ounces of silver on the books, indicated and inferred. We're currently in development, heading towards production. We have an 8-year plan in front of us. It'll be producing about 3.5 million ounces of silver a year, $27 million in capital, internal rate of return of more than 70%. Alexco is a good place to be if you believe that the future in silver is bright. And in addition to that, Alexco is one of the few primary silver producers left in the world, and Alexco will be Canada's only primary silver producer.
There's no doubt the silver is there, but what makes Alexco the right team to mine it?
Alexco is making this transition from explorer-developer to developer-producer. And admittedly, that's a road that's fraught with exposure and risk. But, you know, at Alexco, we have a group of people who have been through this transition before. So I am very confident, given the talent and ability of the people that we have around us, that we'll be successful in making that transition.
Of course, when the mines in Keno Hill Silver District are once again back in business, Alexco will have no control over what's happening in the silver market. but Clint Newman understands what he has to do.
The one thing I can control is costs, and that's where we're focused, and just making sure that our margins are going to be preserved no matter what that silver market is doing.
In addition to their near-term production, Alexco is continuing exploration. The company is confident there's still much more silver to be found in Yukon's Keno Hill Silver District.
When we come back, how a tech company is able to recover energy from wastewater. A lot of energy.
In the US and Canada, for instance, that's a total of about $40 billion a year that can be recovered.
We'll be right back. You're watching BTV.
Welcome back to BTV. Here's what this mining analyst has to say about this gold exploration company, Cardinal Resources.
Cardinal Resources, they're in Ghana, and they've got about, I think, a little better than 6 million ounces already defined right now on their resources. The grade isn't super high grade, but it's your regular West African grade. Nothing that's going to be a negative. I think just the size of the deposit is what's going to get people's attention. For the guys at Cardinal, we're going to keep pushing ahead, and someone, I think, is going to find this deposit of interest.
Next, Shark Energy Systems mine a resource that's literally going down the drain.
The main focus of Shark is to recover the billions of dollars a year that is put down the drain in the form of warm wastewater. So from showers, dishwashers, laundry, all that energy from every house in the world ends up going down the drain system. In the US and Canada, for instance, that's a total of about $40 billion a year that can be recovered. And with that, the associated carbon savings. Shark Energy has really a product for every part of the market. We have a large industrial product called a Shark Unit. We have a single building product called a Piranha, and we're just coming out with a household version. Everything we do reduces carbon. We offset natural gas on all of our installations, so we're one of the leading technologies in the world on carbon reduction. We have now opened on three continents. We have offices in North America, Australia, and the UK. We have installations in three continents. One very exciting project we did recently was convert an entire university in Scotland from natural gas to sewage heat recovery. And the carbon reduction associated with that has won that university acclaim around the world for the system. In the new world order here of reducing carbon, we're going to be a major player, but we can be a very, very reliable, responsible company in the meantime.
I hope we showed you today there's certainly no shortage of opportunities to invest in.
But as always, it still boils down to risk versus reward.
Thanks for joining us today. For BTV, I'm Taylor Tone.
And I'm Jessica Kachachak.
Until next time, may your portfolio prosper.